You are listening to the Cycling Podcast at the Giro d'Italia in association with Rafa, the fastest clothing in the world tour, the home of cycling with character. Ride and watch with Rafa in 2019 as they partner with EF Education First and Canyon SRAM. Today we are in Ceresole Reale.
Cozze ci tene, cozze, cozze vicine, non spigudeci cora, non spigudeci cora. Cozze ci tene, cozze, cozze vicine, non spigudeci cora, se non mangiano le femmine.
I'm very, very happy. No, I'm very proud of my teammates. They did a fantastic job again. Yesterday was more difficult than today. Tomorrow we have again a hard stage, so we will try again and let's go day by day. On the climb before the last one, I saw Roglic good. Yates was behind me. I didn't see him, but I don't know what happened. That gives me more confidence, and I believe that is possible, no? Winning or being at the podium at Verona.
Where are we, Lionel, and who was that?
Well, that was Mikel Landa, and we're at the Giro d'Italia, Richard. I thought you would have known that by now.
I thought we were the Hammer Series.
Oh no. We're at a proper race. No, joking. I'm joking, everyone.
Graham Bartlett used to be our friend. Chaps, we're drinking Icnusa Sardinian beer. Sardinian Piedmont, of course, used to be the same country, same kingdom, up until
is
the
that
19th
right?
century. Yes.
So even though one's an island way down south, yes, and Piedmont's up here, yes, in the northwest.
Absolutely.
Oh, interesting. Goodness.
Well, is that why you ordered that beer?
The buff's eyes are glazing over. Anyway...
It's my eyes, they're stinging. I don't know what it is. I've got
tough
some problem
here
in my
it's
eyes.
Tough up here.
It's the altitude.
We're up high today, weren't we?
It's had some very strange effects on all of us today. I mean, your hot take on the race earlier is so far off.
We'll get to that, Lionel. We'll get to that. We were opened there by one of the men of the day, Mikel Landa, who really did what he did yesterday as well, but this time without his chum.
Is what?
Chum.
Superman.
Exactly, because Superman was off the back with
Superman was
having a bike change.
Another puncture at a bad time for Miguel Angel Lopez.
Today.
Oh, was it
no,
not?
No, it was. So Superman has had three mechanicals that have cost him dearly so far in this Giro. One in the time trial, one yesterday, another one today. Today the issue, I understand, was with his gears.
Right. Either way, it wasn't great timing for him, was it?
A costly error, and he did very well to sort of claw his way back up to Nibali and Roglic, only for Roglic to attack just as he almost got on. It was almost cruel, really. It was like somebody trying to clamber in a window and yeah, someone hammered their fingers just almost as they came in.
Well, shall I try and recap stage 13 of the Giro? I mean, it's impossible to sum up everything that happened today in a minute and a half's tale of the Tapa, but the big winner was Ilnur Zakarin, the Russian rider with Katusha, won the stage and made big gains overall. He is now up to third overall. Jan Polansch kept the pink jersey. Primoz Roglic is still in second place, but behind those two, really, there's been a significant sort of sort out. As you said, Rich, Mikel Landa and Movistar were the other big winners today. Landa was extremely...
No, yeah, I did say that now, but I didn't say that earlier.
You didn't say that earlier. I think you've revised your opinion in the last hour and a half.
I'm changing my mind all the time.
Yeah. But Movistar played a blinder. We'll talk about that a bit later on. And Katusha, well, we've not on the podcast, but in the car, Daniel, we've been talking about what a quiet Giro they've been having. But
until Marco Haller yesterday.
Of course.
Had quite an eventful Giro yesterday.
From him.
We'll get onto that.
We'll hear from him later.
Maybe that did the trick, though. Maybe that put a rock up their backsides.
Maybe, yeah. Maybe Marco Haller had a few words at breakfast with Zakarin and he decided to get in the break. The extraordinary thing was the power that was in that early break. I mean, how they let somebody like Zakarin go up the road, Bauke Mollema go up the road as well. in the first half of the stage, it looked like Trek Segafredo had played a blinder because they had Mollema and three other riders in there, didn't they? But it didn't quite work out for them. But still, very good effort. Behind, well, Roglic followed Vincenzo Nibali just about everywhere. I suspect around about now, Roglic will be following Nibali into the shower or to the dinner table.
Did you see the quote from Nibali that he invited? Well, he suggested that if Roglic wanted to come and take a picture of him, then you know, he'd be welcome.
And he could take a picture of him with his trophies, he said.
Oh, good. That's the sort of beef we need, isn't it? With several mountain stages still to go. Anyway, as I said, Paul Ensch is still in the pink jersey. What else happened? Well, a great day for Pavel Sivakov of Team Ineos. He is now in the white jersey. Hugh Carthy lost quite a bit of time today. I think the other two jerseys stay on the same sets of shoulders. Arnaud Démare came in with the broom wagon, but he's still in the Ciclamino jersey, and Giulio Ciccone is still in the King of the Mountain jersey. Back in the King of the Mountain jersey. But we'll unpick the stage and who did well and who didn't. Now
we should mention Theo Gegenhardt as well, who was in that break and had a really nasty crash. His fractured clavicle. He's out the Giro, which is a great shame on a day that he was on the attack.
The fastest clothing in the World Tour, the home of cycling with character. Ride and watch with Rafa in 2019 as they partner with EF Education First and Canyons RAM.
Thank you very much indeed to our headline sponsors, Rafa. I wouldn't be here without them. Almost in greater numbers than Lotto Soudal, the cycling podcast at the moment. A full complement of people here. Lotto Soudal, I think, are down to four or five. Five, maybe? Anyway, they're reducing all the time. We'll overtake them by Monday.
Don't worry. Yeah, I'm pulling out on the rest day, to give you a heads up on that.
How's your clavicle, Daniel?
Yeah, it's fine. When did that become common parlance? The clavicle. It's a collarbone.
You did comment on that. I was just reading a tweet from the team. Broken clavicle. Anyway, broken collarbone. Same thing. Eventful stage. You said that Trek Segafredo deserved credit. I think they deserve a lot of credit for what they did today. I spoke to Kim Anson, their sports director, at the finish, and he said that it wasn't a plan at all. It was just following the moves. They're obviously going for the King of the Mountains jersey. They've got two riders in contention for that, Ciccone and Brambilla, who lost it today. But Ciccone rode extremely well today. And once they found themselves in that 28-man group with Mollema there, obviously they were committed to it, which meant that an awful lot of the burden of the workload fell on them, I think, in that group. But it was interesting, while I'm behind, that the team that took responsibility was Jumbo-Visma. You know, they don't have the pink jersey, but you could say they've got the virtual pink jersey. And they're obviously taking on that role of being the team with the favourite. They're assuming that responsibility and doing that, aren't they?
Well, yeah, they are, and you have to wonder how much of that work they're going to be able to do, and whether they shouldn't have perhaps said to UAE Team Emirates, come on, you know, you've got to do a bit here today while you've got the jersey. But of course, UAE Team Emirates would need Paul Ensch to blow up to lose the jersey. It was always likely that even, you know, he'd keep the jersey today. So it was a bit of a standoff, and obviously Jumbo-Visma have a lot more to lose if they had, you know, let that break go beyond what did it get at the time, you know, 3 minutes-ish, 3 and a bit minutes at its most, and that looked worrying enough. They wouldn't have wanted to let that go any further on than that, even with the big climb at the end, surely.
But the main peloton kind of dribbled around the defence and stopped the ball on the line and kind of forgot to put it in, didn't they? Because they got to within about 20 seconds, and then Masnada of Gianni Savio's Androni Sidomek team kind of, well, he got a second win, and with him, the break got its second win. At that point, no one would have bet that the break would have yielded the stage winner, but that's what it did.
It was a very odd thing happened. Five riders from the break dropped the others, went clear. Joe Dombrowski was there as well. But they were all riders who weren't really, you know, in the Bauke Mollema category of being some kind of outside threat. And at that point, the bunch behind switched off. They just stopped completely, thinking perhaps that the remnants of that group would come back to them. But what happened then is that group reformed with Davide Formolo, Bauke Mollema, Ilner Zakarin, and they came back up to the the escapes and went and straight past them.
Maybe most significantly, the two Movistar riders,
yes.
Carretero and Amador.
Yeah, I think this just shows how unpredictable the Giro can be. And just to go back to your hot take after the stage, Richard, saying that...
My view at the finish was that the big winner was Primoz Roglic today in the end.
Yeah, I think he was, because he looked good and he's not, you know... He's not lost time to Nibali, and Yates had a bad day, so, you know, that's one person that's definitely out of the picture. But Mikel Landa is creeping back up, and Zakarin, I think, is too good to allow back into the top three. You know, whether he can actually win the race, I'm not sure. No, you're shaking your head. But, you know, you never know. Funny alliances could form in the, you know, in the final week or even tomorrow. And well, now there are so many riders.
That's the problem. Yeah, I think for Jumbo-Visma, I mean, the thing that makes them even more vulnerable than they already are is multiple threats. Multiple people to have to chase, because there will come a point in the race where Roglic might be a sitting duck and he has to decide which one of those moves he goes with, and he might get quite overwhelmed in that position.
Yeah, because Movistar have got Canapaz and Landa both getting closer all the time. Zakarin, as I say, is now back in. Lopez is not going to sit down.
Who?
Miguel Angel's
Spider-Man.
Spider-Man. He's not going to take it lying down, is he? So, yeah, Micah will...
Spider-Man.
Micah's in there as well.
Carapaz is a big danger, I think, isn't he? He looks really good. And Landa's such a good foil for him, as we saw today. The two of them together, I mean, Landa's lost a little bit more time, so... There's not going to be so much anxiety when he goes up the road at the moment, but he looks so...
Ooh, I don't know.
I mean, he took, a minute and a half back today, did he?
About that. Yeah, but it's 2 minutes in 2 days. I mean, how different would this race currently look if Superman had not had his two punctures? One yesterday, and the mechanical problem today. Yesterday, Astana's intention was for him to attack pretty early on the Montoso climb and for the group behind to fracture, so there were only really leaders left. What actually happened was that he had to chase and his attack came quite late, and therefore it only did limited damage. He got 28 seconds. But today, I imagine that he would have been one of the main candidates to go with Landa when Landa attacked. They probably would have gained more time again, and it all would have looked slightly different. But the whole thing with, you know, Landa's attacks and the time that he's kind of nibbling back, it reminds me a little bit of the 1998 Tour de France with Pantani in the Pyrenees. He'd lost 5 minutes or more to Ulrich in the time trial, and in the first two stages in the Pyrenees, he took a similar amount of time to what Landa has taken now, and people weren't really concerned, and they thought it was a done deal, or it was going to win, and he just kept nibbling away to the point where Ulrich was under pressure, and then Ulrich collapsed.
If Landa has another day tomorrow like he had today, suddenly it will all feel very, very different, because it will then be, they'll have to keep him on a much tighter leash, and Roglic doesn't have the riders to do that. So I think this is, it's kind of salami tactics, isn't it? You know, slice by slice, Landa's dragging himself back in. Of course, he's not going to have infinite energy, is he? I don't know whether he can keep doing this, but the way Movistar played
his mouth yet.
it's remarkable after the stage that, you know, the riders, most of the riders go through a quite elaborate post-stage routine now, where they're sort of ushered away from the journalists, and they, you know, put a towel over their head and they warm down, and it's 10 or 15 minutes before they speak to a journalist. Landa just, you know, plonked himself in the boot and started gassing.
Well, it reminds me of a couple of years ago when Landa rode like this, but having lost loads of time, having been involved in the crash that took out Geraint Thomas, the Giro that Tom Dumoulin won, wasn't it, a couple of years ago? But Landa just went on the kind of rampage in the mountains, and he kept doing this. But as you say, Lionel, it's kind of different now as he gets a bit closer. The problem that Roglic has is he doesn't have a Laurens de Plus since you took de Plus out the Giro.
He doesn't have somebody
like that. I think he would have been absolutely, or Robert Hessink as well, who's missing as well. He doesn't have, it doesn't seem that he has a rider like that who can be there in the final selection of 10 or 12 riders. Antoine Tolhoek was up the road today. But once he came back, he wasn't much use at all. And I expected more from him. And he doesn't really have anybody who's in that selection of 10, 15 riders.
By contrast, Movistar are mob-handed, aren't they? They've got, obviously, Landa. Carapaz is actually ahead of Landa overall. So, you know, that's... Carapaz is almost a forgotten man. I mean, he's not really done anything yet. And
no promise, but to Martinelli, the DS of Astana, saying, he said, you know, you can't even, you don't even, can't even be sure that he's riding a bike. He's so he's so under the radar.
And then today they had Amador up there. They had Caratello up there as well.
Who's 23 years old. I thought he rode extremely well when Landa bridged across him. One of Fran Reyes's boys, isn't he, from his old team?
But you know, we always look back on a day like today and go, oh, well, didn't they play it brilliantly? You know, it all worked out. You know, they had riders in the right places at the right time. When Landa made his move, he had teammates nearby. They all worked well together. It's interesting to hear just how much of that was planned. So at the finish, I spoke to the Movistar sports director, Max Sciandri.
And straight after that, should we hear from Adi Engels, the Jumbo-Visma sports director, about how they intend to counteract Landa over the next few days.
This morning, what did you think was the best case scenario for if Landa could get away? What sort of time did you think was the maximum he could get on Roglic?
Well, you know, we got, I think, 1:37, I think, something like that on Roglic, just like listening to race radio. 1:40-ish on Nibali with a little bonus we got with the third place. So we're happy, you know. It's tough to get time back, you know, and it's easy to lose time. It's tough to get it back, you know. So we started today and we're getting it back.
And Carapaz as well, also making little gains. I mean, every little counts.
Everything counts, you know, and we have two incredible strong guys and a great team, so we're going to keep trying.
Tactically, what was the plan? Because it wasn't until the middle bit of the race that you really started to make some moves, I think.
Well, we couldn't do it before, you know. It is a hard climb, but it is a valley, you know. It's like you can't do stuff on valleys, you know, even... If we need the gradients, we need the 8, 9, 10%. That's where we do stuff, you know. So valley roads, it's hard. We had to stop the guys in front and to start towing people from the back, you know. So that's what we look at. And we knew the central before the tunnel, that was a kick up. So we just had them pop off there and perfectly, you know. Hector was a little bit short, but we did the job.
How much of it can you actually plan, though? I mean,
yeah, you can plan to a certain point, but then you know, things change and legs change, you know, but I think it came out pretty well.
A bit of luck that they all got together at the right point in the race,
I guess. Yeah, that was it.
I don't know at the moment. I mean, I think, of course, he went from far, and that was possible because he was still far. He's getting a bit closer again, but obviously he's going very strong, and also the team is. I mean, they do really nice moves yesterday and today. Immediately when he has a gap, there is guys to support him. So that was, as a neutral spectator, it was really nice moves and good to see. Of course, the moment will come when he keeps closing in that one moment he will become too dangerous and there will be more reaction immediately. Instead of hesitating like yesterday and today.
Tomorrow's a short stage, it's going to be explosive. Is that going to suit you guys, or is it going to make it even more dangerous for you?
I don't know. No, it's a difficult question. I mean, today it was good to see that we took control in the flatter part in the valley between the first two big climbs. Obviously, tomorrow those guys will not be able to do that. There will not be such a section as well. On the other hand, we also saw that at the bottom of the last climb today, we were still with two guys close to Primoz, with Antoine just being in front in the break, and Koen Bouwman still with him.
Chute à l'arrière du peloton. Cycling podcast team car at the back of the pack, please.
That's Seb Piquet, race radio of the Tour de France, interrupting our Giro coverage to remind us to tell you that this episode is sponsored by The Economist. And all our listeners can get a free copy of The Economist delivered by texting the word cycling to 78070. Richard, you've been reading The Economist. What has caught your eye in the latest issue?
Well, an article about Italy, funnily enough, on my way over in the plane. And we're seeing Cavour, the birthplace of Italy's first post-unification prime minister. But it was an article about the Italian economy. Did you know that Italy was in recession at the end of last year? Did you know that?
No, but I had a sense from travelling around Italy that it was on a downward rather than upward sort of trajectory?
Well, it was in a very brief, mild recession, and the economy grew by 0.2%, and that is enough to nudge them out of recession. But the outlook isn't that rosy. As you might imagine, the exports to Italy are very, very important, and of course there are a number of threats to world trade at the moment. Their trade surplus, their export trade surplus, is 4.6% of GDP, which is large indeed. But with various pressures on world trade, Brexit, Donald Trump, etc., the outlook for the Italian economy is not great. And yeah, it's an interesting article, because the European elections, which were yesterday, are also very important domestically, because the Five Star Movement, if they did very well in the European elections, it could put a lot of pressure on for them to become the dominant partner in the coalition. So there's a lot in the article about politics and the economy.
Well, The Economist is about more than just politics and economics. It covers a range of subjects, from world politics and business to science, technology, the arts and sport, and it helps readers prepare for what's going on in the world around them. And if you'd like to try The Economist, get a free copy delivered to you if you're in the UK, text the word cycling to 78070.
Well, Lionel, a bit of business from last night. Corrections Corner, I believe.
Indeed.
One or two corrections today for you?
Only one, I think. I called the doping investigation out of Austria and Germany, as the kids will be saying. I called it the Andalas, Operation Andalas. It's not, it's Operation Adalas.
Actually, Andalas is another investigation that we know about, which is all about shrinking feet in professional cycling.
Primoz Roglic has gone down a shoe size in this Giro. Explain that.
That's Andalas. Well, we'll get on to that. That'll be a comment.
The thing I'm aggrieved about with this is that deep down I knew it was Adalas, and I don't know why I said Andalas, but my teammate here was looking the other way when I said this and didn't step in.
Andalas as well, and I definitely knew it was Adalas. Anyway, these things happen.
I think I heard Rob Hatch say Andalas in commentary today as well.
Oh dear. Well, easy mistake, mate. But it means something in German.
It means bloodletting. It means like bleeding,
right,
really.
There we are. So it's not Andalas, it's Adalas. Thank you very much.
So to everyone involved in Operation Adalas, sorry about that.
To the first person who pointed that out, thank you very much for pointing that out. To everybody else who then pointed it out.
I know, yeah. Any other business from last night? Well, speaking of business, I learned today that Balcomolima did stop to do his business, as rumoured in the podcast,
hence
in yesterday's stage.
Yeah, we speculated, didn't we? Or I'd got a bit of information. And maybe that was Operation Andalas. Then Balcomolima was gonna stop, not to let blood, but to let something else.
Operation Have a Slash.
Yes.
Sorry, everyone.
At some point on before the climb on yesterday's stage, as a way of kind of, well, he wasn't going to send his teammates back to help him get back up to the peloton, because he wanted to kind of warm up his engine, so he wanted to do a big effort before the stage. And it's probably the most accurate thing that's ever been said on the cycling podcast.
Well, thanks to Jacob, the press officer at Trek Segafredo, for confirming that. He said it worked pretty well, so maybe we'll see more of Balcomolima urinating on the side of the road in this Giro. Something to look out for. Anyway,
back to the race.
Back to today's stage.
Yeah. Ilnur Zakarin, what a dangerous man to let back into the picture. Maybe not a potential winner, but certainly someone who can now contend for the podium, no?
Possibly.
I mean, third in the Vuelta before.
Forgotten man, isn't he? Because he had a poor season last year, and I think, you know, we were talking today as well about Nibali, we were saying about how long it seems since we've seen him really in contention on these big mountain stages. But when you think, he looked pretty good at the Tour de France last year before crashing on Alpe d'Huez, so he kind of lost a year of Grand Tour racing last year. And yeah, he had a disappointing Vuelta, but the year before that. But you know, it doesn't take long, does it, for somebody to kind of slip out of the picture, and for you to think. And I would say Zakarin is in that category.
Hang on, he was ninth in the Tour de France last year.
We talked about that. Alain Zubeldia into ninth at the Tour de France.
From a break in the end, wasn't it? Hauled himself into the top 10. But he's been on the podium at the Vuelta. He'd been fifth in the Giro. He was going really well in the Giro that year when he had the terrible crash.
Day of Kruiswijk.
That's right.
On the Agnello.
Yeah, and he was very well placed and looking good. I think he's a somebody that they will possibly regret letting in to the top sort of five places at this stage, but you know, who knows. Anyway, at the finish I spoke to Katusha's sports director Dmitry Konishev.
The Silver Bullet.
That's really
his nickname.
Yeah?
Yeah, the Silver Bullet.
Where does that come from?
I forget, but that's his nickname.
What colour medal did he win at the 1989 World Championships?
Bronze, wasn't it? He'd been in the break all day, hadn't he, that day? And it was Lamont Kelly and...
Well, Kelly was third, so Konishev was second, silver. Okay. Silver Bullet, that's probably it, isn't it? I wanted to know whether Konishev was surprised that Zakharin was given as much leeway as he had today, and what was the most significant thing for them, the stage win or the fact that they now have something to play for overall?
Okay, now it's... for us, it starts to be interesting. So we see tomorrow what's happened, and then we will stop thinking maybe about the podium.
Were you surprised that they let Zakharin go? Because it's not like he was out of it this morning.
No, I was really surprised, because at the end it looks like they will be catched by the second group. And they are lucky, because Astana wasn't pushed really a block before the climb. And then they gained some, I think, 1.5 minutes. It was enough to be a little bit sure about the stage, and then he was really strong the last 5 kilometers.
Did it help that both objectives were there, that the stage win was there, but also gaining time? It meant everyone was trying to pull in that group, didn't it?
Yeah, but in the middle of the race, we were not thinking about even stage victory, not GC, nothing, because he was always talking, I'm not so super, I'm not so good. That at the end, he was really, really good leg. So I say, try, why not? And we try first for GC, because I was thinking in this steep part of the climb, somebody will come. It was happened a lot of attacks behind, I heard. But nobody came, and nobody came, and then in the end, here I fell on.
And now you can play with Movistar and Astana, because you're in the same position.
But we will see, because it was a strange situation today, because Roglic remained alone, and Astana were pulling. They did his job at the end. Well, we'll go step by step. Even us, we don't have such a strong team to control the race. So in this situation, for us, it's for the moment, it's okay.
The best days on Grand Tours are the ones where you sift through the results and try to calculate who will be feeling happy and who will be feeling disappointed with their day's effort. Mitchelton Scott will have to be feeling disappointed, I would have thought, even though Mikel Nieve was second on the stage. I did speak to Nieve at the finish as well, just about what he was doing in the break, and obviously the idea was to try and do something similar to Movistar, have somebody good up the road just in case Simon Yates wanted to make a move on one of the later climbs. But Yates clearly didn't have the legs, and then Nieve was kind of caught between a rock and a hard place, because he had to wait to be given the opportunity to race for himself and try for the stage win. And I sort of asked him about that sort of mental switch from going, I'm performing one role here, to now I need to try and win the stage. And well, he did a decent job, but Zakharin was just too strong, and behind Simon Yates, well, his Giro GC chances are now gone, aren't they?
Well, I would say they're in serious jeopardy. Whether they're gone or not, I'm not sure. When you consider that Nibali 3 years ago turned around a 5 minute deficit in over a couple of days, didn't he, in the final week, then I think that Yates, I'm just looking where he is now on GC. He is 8 minutes 14 down on Pollanc. He's just over 6 minutes down on Roglic. So it's looking unlikely that he'll be able to win the Giro. But I think he'll probably keep trying. I don't think it's at the point yet where he will sacrifice or willingly lose time on general classification to target stage wins.
It's not really in his DNA, that, is it, if he's set out to try and ride for GC, because he's in a phase of his career now where he is a GC rider, and even if it goes badly for a few days, he still needs to carry on with that process, the discipline of holding the wheels, the discipline of trying to stay with the best guys. And if he gets into the end of next week and he's riding with the Roglic group and not having trouble, then that will be a positive he can take from it. And as the race goes on, it's more likely that the GC riders will start winning the stages, isn't it? And so there may well be something up for grabs for him one day next week, or maybe even tomorrow, who knows?
One man at Mitchelton who is impressing Lionel is Lucas Hamilton, the young Australian rider who was a surprise selection really for the Giro this year, but he was Yates' best domestique today. I spoke to him after the finish.
It was a long climb and he was pacing his effort, and I don't know how he finished, but he was definitely just riding himself into it. So yeah, look, I did as much as I could at the bottom, and I knew that these longer stages probably, for me being my first Grand Tour, I'll struggle more at the end. So I did as much as I could early on, and I think it is what it is, but it's probably the first big mountain day, and then we've still got a lot to come, and I think it's one of those races where I'm sure Simon will ride himself into it.
It seemed like that long valley took its toll on a lot of people. It was quite a wearing climb.
Yeah, for sure. I think that's really where the first Cat 2 before thing really lit up, and it was a very select group over the top, and then we had nearly an hour or so of riding that valley, which was slightly uphill, and I think that's really what taxed people. That's when it took its toll, and then when we hit the climb, you could see who was hurting the most. But yeah, it was okay. It was a long climb.
The Cycling Podcast at the Giro d'Italia is supported by Science in Sport. Science in Sport, fueled by science.
Thank you very much indeed to Science and Sport for their support of the Cycling Podcast. Very grateful as ever to them. You can get 25% off your Science and Sport products at scienceandsport.com with the code SISCP25. And as we said last night, Lionel, people, we certainly will be stocking up on our Science and Sport products for the bike ride that we are doing on the 26th of September. Tickets went on sale today for what we're calling the Wold Championships, the Wold Top Brewery, in association with Wold Top Brewery in Yorkshire, East Yorkshire. A beautiful ride in the Yorkshire Moors, organised and led by La Corsa. And tickets went on sale today, and they've almost sold out. There's only a few left.
So yeah.
Don't know why I'm plugging it again. But
well, we'll sell out tonight, hopefully.
Hopefully, yeah.
And that will mean a full field for the inaugural World Championships. And I'd better get training, Richard. I don't know how we... Are we going to split into groups?
That's all been organised.
People can pay extra not to have to ride in my group.
It's all been thought out. It's a bike ride... buffet dinner, and then a talk, a live podcast in effect. World Championship week, really looking forward to it. First time we've done anything like this. If it sells out in a day, then we'll do it again. We're really looking forward to that.
It's going
to
be great.
It's going to be really good. I should also say the next batch, the second and final batch of the Giro d'Italia cups, the mugs by ceramicist Stacey Snyder, go on sale on Sunday at 9 a.m. US East Coast time. That's 3 o'clock Italian time. Now, Stacey's given me those timings. I hope that's correct, Stacey.
So that's 2 o'clock UK time.
2 o'clock UK time. Proceeds from the mugs go to two worthy causes, Ride for Charlie and the Kelly Catlin Fund. The first batch sold out during stage one. So the second batch will go on sale on Sunday, as I say, 9 a.m. US East Coast time, 3 o'clock Italian time, 2 o'clock UK time. And you will find them at the Stacey Snyder's Etsy page, etsy.com/shop/Snyder Ceramics, I believe is the address. Stacey Snyder, look her up, Stacy Snyder, Snyder. Any problems finding them, give us a shout.
Where are we, Daniel? I'm a bit lightheaded.
We are 2,200 metres above sea level on the Colle del Nivolet. Well, we're actually short of the Colle del Nivolet. The climb actually tops out line a few kilometres from where we are. It's a bit of a shame, in my opinion, that we've not been able to go all the way to the summit. The race hasn't gone all the way to the summit. It's a bit like going to the Louvre and the Mona Lisa being covered up.
Well, it is. Well, I mean, but what are the conditions like? I mean, we're lucky. It's a good day. It's a nice day. But if they'd done that and then ended up having to finish here...
because of the weather conditions or something, then you'd be complaining about that.
But it's not. I don't think the weather... Well, originally, that wasn't the reason not to finish at 2,600... I think 2,612, I think, is the top of the climb. It was more to do with the fact that the road actually goes into the Val d'Aosta, into a different region, and there's a whole different issue with kind of protection of an area of great natural beauty, the Gran Paradiso Natural Park. That's the problem, I think, and that is what actually kept the Giro from coming here for a long time. There were always rumours about this climb because it was a bit of an anomaly that it had not been featured in the Giro. You know, this is a wild part of the Alps, Lionel, and a very famous story linked with this climb or this part of the Alps. In 1944, there was a fusilier from Northumberland, Alfred Southern, who escaped from a concentration camp back down the valley. He was in a group of 39 of them that were making their way from down the valley. They were hoping to reach Val d'Isère on the other side of the French border, just to your left line or behind the dam. And conditions got pretty bad. It was November, and they sort of split up the group. A lot of them went off towards Val d'Isère and slipped down the mountain to their death. The ones that stayed behind all died, except Alfred Sutton. There were two of them left for the last few days, and at one point they were sort of eyeing each other up, thinking about maybe making each other their last meal, chewing on belts to stay alive. And Alfred Southern actually lost two legs in the expedition, but survived and wrote a book about it. And a few years later was featured, would you believe, on This Is Your Life with Eamon Andrews. I understand that TV show launched in 1955 and Alfred Southern was one of the guests in 1959.
Wow. So, he was against the odds, wasn't he? Here in November, would have been extremely cold. When you say eating belts, what? Because they were leather? Chewing?
They thought they could possibly extract some nutrition from the belt. I mean, it wouldn't have earned them any airtime in your vegan podcast, would it?
No, it wouldn't. But quite remarkable that only Albert survived. Out of 39.
Of the whole expedition, yeah.
So that was, those who stayed behind didn't make it, those who set off to try and get into France didn't make it, apart from Albert. That's quite an extraordinary story, isn't it?
Well, Daniel, a stunning climb, really, from not just the geographic point of view and the historical point of view, but for the race, it was everything
it was,
I look for.
Yeah, it was. Again, I was slightly disappointed that we didn't go to the top. To sort of bastardise and paraphrase something I've said before and something I said earlier, it was kind of like going to interview Marcel Kittel and him wearing a baseball cap. You know, we didn't see the top, we didn't see the best bit, we didn't see his Barnet. You know, the Col de Nivolet, the pièce de résistance, is really higher. But
the road itself was dramatic. It was narrow. It was quite rough in places, but it really snaked around with some very tight hairpins. It really climbs up the steep side of the mountain. So visually, it was fantastic. The gradient changed enough to make the race interesting as well. A real sort of find, a real discovery for the Giro.
I found out an intriguing fact, a fact that intrigued me anyway. After the Second World War, the Italians on this side used to haul bags of rice, 50 kilogram bags of rice, up to the French border, and the French from Val d'Isère used to come up with 50 kilos bags of salt, and they used to swap them because the two commodities were difficult to obtain after the war, apparently.
I thought you were going to say they hauled them up there and then made a massive risotto, which
they probably did. They probably did.
A very salty one by the sounds
of
things.
Yeah, salt risotto, not really. No. Need other ingredients. Maybe some black truffle, but we're not in that area, are
we? Talking of salt, do you know who was pretty salty yesterday? Marco Haller. After yesterday's stage, when a fan tried to rip a bead on out of his mouth, basically. The clip went viral. Marco was filmed and regaling the world with some fairly colourful language, the kind of language that you only learn when you're a fan of Arsenal Football Club. And I spoke to Marco today about the incident, also a little bit about his Giro so far. Remember, Marco Hall had a terrible knee accident last year, almost lost his leg. This is his first
knee injury.
He had a knee injury, almost lost his left leg, and he's running his first Grand Tour since the terrible knee accident.
I mean, first of all, I need to say, after such a hard day, you're under quite a lot of tension, and obviously you have many spectators who want to get something, and want to get a bit in or whatever, and everybody who knows me, I'm the last one who will say no, but apparently, or obviously, when you come home after the race, you're looking forward to meet your Swanee with a recovery shake, and then you just want to get a shower to the bus, and then people obviously screaming to get a bottle, but you just don't take it out of your... of the rider's mouth. I mean, I also don't take your microphone away now and run.
Mark Cavendish once did. But were you aware that someone was filming?
You're always aware that somebody is filming. This is more than cycling, or this is more than sport, and this is more than society, so...
And obviously it had been a long day for you. Happy to get in the break, and I think you were quite happy to play a role for Zakarin as well?
We need to say that it was a very important job I could do yesterday. Didn't expect it to be that important. Like, first of all, we said, okay, if a big group is going, we want to be there to play the cards, because obviously we don't have climbers, so it's no other chance to support Zach. And then I tried to get a bit of a head start for the climb, to try to go for a result, because there was also Biermann's there, so he could be there for Zach in any case. But the climb was just too steep, and legs were not good enough, and so took it easy up the climb. Then when I saw I'm out of results, and literally waited on top of the climb like for 4 minutes or five, I don't know. And then yeah, Zach really we created a gap, because obviously Nibali, they're good descenders, and Zach was a little bit under trouble there, but with me, and it was also Mollema, Biermans, we had some guys around and could bridge this gap to the favorite group quite quick, so at the end it worked out well.
And you've had a long spring, Marco. This is obviously your first year back after the knee injury, your first Grand Tour. I mean, how's the knee bearing up, and how are you bearing up generally?
I must say that the knee is going pretty well. I have good days, I have bad days still, but our physio is doing excellent work, so I get extra treatment literally every day. Having a short season last year maybe helps me to have a strong spring this year, but I definitely need a good rest after the Giro, but I still have the desire to race, so nothing wrong with that.
So what was your opinion, Richard, first, of Marco Haller's reaction?
No, let's rephrase that. Who is the most of the podcast triumvirate?
Here we go.
Who is the most likely to react in a similar fashion to Marco Haller?
I wouldn't have liked that one bit. I mean, he's come.
Do you think Lionel? Possibly.
I don't know. Well, Napalm?
I'm not sure.
I think... There's no well question about who'd be the least likely, but there's probably some debate about who'd be the most likely.
Oh,
I don't think you would react like that, like Daniel.
No, I'd probably sulk, wouldn't I?
You'd sulk, yeah. You'd just go quiet for 24 hours.
I think we see this. It's hard to just single out the guy and you know, make him the villain of the piece. He made an error of judgment, and he realised it immediately.
Yeah, that's the fan or Michael Haller?
The fan. The fan. He made an error of judgment. He reached for the bottle that was in Haller's mouth. I mean, that's what made it much worse, I think. But then as soon as he realised what he'd done, he did sort of back off, and his hands were up in a quite conciliatory manner. But just the sort of grabbing of the riders, grabbing of their bottles, is a souvenir really worth that? Haller's language, fair play to him. I mean, you know, we've heard worse in the cycling podcast car, haven't we?
I'm not sure we have. I must say, I stood
you've
talking,
not been listening.
I stood talking to Marco for about 5 minutes this morning at the start, and there must have been half a dozen riders who offered their warm congratulations on what he did yesterday. You're our hero, mate.
Sounds like he might have been an Australian there.
Should have whacked him, and so forth.
Well,
and so forth.
We've had a few ironic suggestions that Marco Haller be a contender for Pedlar de Charme.
No, that can't happen.
No, but I would say that Andre Zeitz, the Astana rider, is definitely a contender, because if you watch the clip, he appeared and he could see that something was kicking off, and he actually got his bottle out to hand it to the fan, thinking that he'd be happy. He was just looking for a bottle. So I think he could be a contender for Pedlar de Charme.
Yeah, he's trying to de-escalate.
I think Haller will be not a strong nomination.
I'm sure he will. Well, we'll see, won't we? The public may well decide.
It's not up to us. But we can't. We're not condoning his language, obviously.
That's how it works. That's how
it works. But it's terrible language. But I think you can understand his reaction. And I think, yeah, I totally agree that the fan has also done something in the heat at the moment that was silly, and yeah, we shouldn't vilify him too
but
much.
You then spend, I mean, the guy seeing himself being tweeted and the video being shared, I mean, it really did go viral, certainly in cycling terms. Can't have been a comfortable evening for him. So I kind of feel sorry for him that he was the centre of that.
He's got he can't retreat to Corrections Corner.
He can't.
Tone in the way that we can.
And he can't say, well, I didn't mean to do that, because, well, he did do that. Whereas I didn't mean to say Andalas. Anyway.
Speaking of possible contenders for Pedlar de Charme, I spoke very briefly this morning to yesterday's stage winner, Cesare Benedetti, who, of course, featured in our Kilometre Zero a couple of days ago. And Lionel, today's Kilometre Zero was...
Yes, that's right, Rich. We heard from the Lotto Soudal rider, Adam Hansen, who is a vegan, heard all about his diet. I was really interested to know how, whether that's compatible with life as a professional cyclist. Obviously, for him, it is. But we also heard from Nigel Mitchell, the nutritionist with EF Education First, and also from Max Chiandri, who rode the 2000 Giro for the Linda McCartney Foods team, and they were completely vegetarian. Not vegan, but vegetarian. So that's Kilometre Zero, supported by Hans Grohe, episode 6, 3 more to come next week.
Well, Benedetti had a theory about why he won yesterday's stage. Let's hear it.
The cycling podcast brought me luck. Yeah, we opened a bottle yesterday night, and yeah, it was the best feeling was probably going back to the hotel and meeting the teammates and all the staff members. I think it's better we wait to celebrate properly at the end in Verona, because there are hard stages coming up, and we're still well positioned with Micah. Formula is still there. I think he will be very good in the third week. So we have to keep focused there.
So we should wrap things up, because we've got a bit of a drive back to our hotel, haven't we, tonight?
No wine chat tonight. The buff's back. Zero wine chat.
Well, I'm up for wine chat. I mean, we had some very nice red wine last night.
Oh, that was nice.
It wasn't
quite
as nice as the Barbaresco. Same grape variety, but not quite as nice as Nebbiolo d'Alba last night.
Is this area any wines?
Well,
we
have to head out of the valley back towards Turin. So we're heading back into wine country tonight. Yeah, you have to nurse me through tomorrow, because I'll be covering stage with a heavy heart. I should have been playing in the French Speed Golf Open tomorrow.
Oh, of course,
Well, I couldn't afford that. The 100 euro entry fee, the 70 euros to go through the Mont Blanc tunnel, the 200 euros to hire the car. It got very lumpy. The sponsors, never materialised. You know. The listeners never.
They didn't pony up either.
I spent hundreds and hundreds of euros going to the pounds going to the FA Cup final.
Yeah, well, exactly. I also learned from your mistake.
Fair enough.
Yes, we've all learned from that. We should wrap things up. Let's reconvene tomorrow. Thank you very much, Lionel.
Thank you, Richard.
Thank you, Daniel.
Thank you.
Se lo mangiano le femmine.